Have you ever wondered how someone you admire became successful in the professional life, but also in the personal life? What does it take to become not only an outstanding leader, but an outstanding person? Welcome to Season 2 of Leaders Unplugged, a show that explores professional and personal leadership through conversations with leaders, regardless of where they are in their career. I'm Nicole Boivin. Christiane Bergevin is an accomplished executive who currently provides advisory services to clients such as Hydro One. Until recently, she was the chair of the board of directors of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. She also serves as a director on many other boards. Her earlier career includes executive positions with Desjardins Group and SNC-Lavalin. She's a broad thinker with operational know-how who excels in complex environments. Join us as she talks, amongst other things, about how her finance background and her many other interests have provided her and her clients with a unique approach to business development.
Hello, Christiane.
Bonjour.
So I'm here with Christiane Bergevin, who's got quite a list of accomplishments to her name. You've got your own consulting firm as Bergevin, president of Bergevin Capital.
Correct.
Do you not? And one of your main clients right now is Hydro One.
Yes, I've been acting as a senior advisor on a contractual basis for Hydro One since December 2016, in fact.
It's an interesting time to be at Hydro One.
Absolutely. I think I'm very confident my role is to bring new projects. Very confident that we can make a difference and also make a difference for ratepayers in Ontario.
You were an EVP, Executive Vice President, at Desjardins Group. How long were you there?
I was there 6 years under Monique Leroux, with the mission to position Desjardins on a broader scale across Canada, but also internationally, through a mainly partnership and acquisition. I would say my sweet spot has been essentially infrastructure and project financing. That's what I've done for close to 30 years, starting with international financing with EDC to project financing for SNC. And I became the president of SNC-Lavalin Capital, and this corresponded to the time where infrastructure started to be owned by private sector hands. So I'm a financial engineer, in a sense, that has applied the skills to several sectors. And while I was at SNC, we had 25% of our volume in the energy. So energy is just a subset of how do you make projects happening, they make acquisition happening to grow in a profitable way.
So when you say you're a financial engineer, I've never seen that job description anywhere. It's an interesting term that you're using. How do you get ready for something like that?
Well, if you work in an investment banking firm, you collect big revenue from your client. Mm-hmm. You call an investment banker. If you work in an engineering company, you do exactly the same thing. But because the modesty is behind what we do, you structure deal-making such as buying the 407 highway and topping everyone else in the industry, and with the most greatest contribution possible from your in-house colleagues. So you work together using your financial background. You combine the engineering skill set and the wisdom of colleagues, and you develop winning solutions. And, you know, you do what we did with SNC, position it on a world scale with one of the best portfolio of concessions. So you're right. Doesn't exist as a definition, but essentially, what does an engineer do? Mm-hmm. He puts various contributions together. What's a bridge? It's not steel, it's not. It's the wisdom of many people who bring different disciplines together and make amazing accomplishments. So being a financial engineer is just adding the financial dimensions to what people do, be it in the healthcare, be it in engineering, be it in energy, be it in mining. An investment banking specialist would describe this as investment banking, and it is. But I do prefer the financial engineering definition.
I like it. Absolutely. I think it says it all when you know the way you describe it.
You engineer solutions.
You engineer solutions.
The solution is not just about money. It's about our environment can take place fast enough. It's about First Nation partners can contribute. It's about designing something. And perhaps because I wanted to be an architect, that's my first, my university background. So I
really?
Think for me, yeah, I did a session at McGill.
Why did you change?
Well, I wanted to be a sports person. I love tennis, I love volleyball, all these sports, skis. So I was in too many varsity teams, and architecture was extremely demanding. And I realized that it was not enough to have the ideas, you needed to be very good in the technical presentation. My dad was not an architect, so you have to make your way up, and I thought, no, that's going to take too long. So I switched from architecture to business.
Because you could see the same opportunities as far as making something happen.
You could sell your ideas,
uh-huh,
and did not have to do perfect technical drawings for 5 days. Sorry, that's really... And in fact, my plan was to go in real estate development. So was to do development, meaningful development, beautiful development.
As an architect.
As a business person, a great sensitivity to architectures and putting together the money. Again, and that's how I learned.
So it was always there. This whole idea of engineering financial solutions or bringing financial solutions for projects.
Correct. And perhaps because I worked, my first job was with Standard Life in real estate. And I know, Nicole, you were at Manulife. So in those years... insurance companies did finance the bulk of new developments, and I thought, and you had to find a solution. You had a piece of land, and you could afford what you could afford. So I think my training was really architecture and science and business. I learned that with $1, you can make a $100 million project. So I never was trained as a banker. I was trained as a real estate is, you know, a virtual equity. You
yes.
bring tenants, you
yes.
bring a dream, people subscribe to the dream, they sign a contract, then you build a building, and you have put very little equity. So I brought this too. So it's financial engineering.
Financial engineering, I like it. And it's also a skill set, I imagine, that's obviously always been valuable, because if I look at, you know, your accomplishments, you've had great opportunities to apply that. I imagine today, with everything that's going on, it's even more valuable.
I'd say so. I think it is highly valuable, but you have to be with eyes or with people who understand this. So if you apply for a job, there's no such job, as you
exactly.
mentioned, where it says financial engineer. In fact, on my Twitter site, my first description is financial architect. Have you ever seen a job apply as financial architect? No. So very often people who think traditionally will say, what do you do for a living? So, well, I can be a CFO, I can be a CEO,
I can be whatever you want me to be.
Packager solution.
Yes, yes, yes.
But the smart people, the very smart organizations, recognize that the art, it's putting together complex skill set together and
exactly.
creating a solution.
Exactly.
So it is more valuable as the world has gone more sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
Environment, for instance, has taken, you know, it takes 4 years to permit a project, sometimes longer. It used to be that if you had the money and a plan, it happened. Now it's about...
The buy-ins. The negotiations,
yeah,
the influence.
It's about getting partners.
Yes.
It's about soul strategy, you know, gets into play. Always with the idea that you have to know what's the recipe that will work in the end. You still have to get the project to be financed by a bank, by insurance companies, or by pension fund.
When you're looking at these big complex projects, it's really understanding how to influence, how to engage, how to create those partnerships. It goes beyond the technical skill set, does it not?
Yeah, and I would say, in a sense, it's being a sponge and listening to people who are expert. Being able to explain this in simple ways.
So it's being a good communicator.
Good communicator to make
a
and
good
giving
synthesizer.
Yes, good synthesizer. And making examples to which people will relate to in their day-to-day.
Mm-hmm. But you're also working with a lot of different professions when you're working on, say, one of your projects at Hydro One. I imagine there's all kinds of different skill set at the table.
Absolutely. From regulatory to environment, which is so key, to, you know, the project development, the engineers, sometimes archaeologists. What if you're on an Indian cemetery? What if regulatory, understanding the competitive landscape? What if you compete against other parties? So it's essentially very, very interesting if you train yourself to listen, to use that information and find solution. And I'd say that traditional banking training
doesn't
achieve that.
No.
Because traditional banking thinks about ratio and not to, do not exceed this ratio. Mm-hmm. Do not, they don't get people to
apply,
listen, and structuring. And I'm very proud that in my career I've structured so many A-rated power projects.
So how do you get ready for that? How do you get ready for that kind of role? If we're thinking about this podcast, you know, and I'm hoping there's a lot of young female potential leaders listening in, what would you tell them?
I'd say if you have to work in an environment where you're exposed, where you have enough latitude to grow, and at the same time that has size, right? So I think it's about making compromise in a sense. You know, if I describe this, and I'd say, yes, women, and I'd say very often people of a different cultural background. Because if you came, if you adapted to a new community, you're more, usually,
sensitive.
More sensitive, more open. And that's, again, it's not in the CV. Let's say for investment banker, you have to be sensitive to consideration, and you have, how do you demonstrate this? So I think it's the soft skills and the best people, people who make projects happening as if it was magic.
You're also very active on the governance front. I understand currently you're the chair of the board of directors for the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. It's a one-year term, is how it works.
Yes, correct. You're elected by the members, but you have to have been involved as a board member, as a member of the executive, and there's a progression. And the fifth woman in the history of the chamber since 1920. And my successor will also be a woman, who's with Suncor, very capable woman. We incorporated, I'm very proud of it, to me that's a little bit my legacy, to a task force that we had with two very capable women. We incorporated a diversity focus, which means that we're one of the first, if not the first, large-scale organization in Canada, or association, to have a 40% objective on women on our board and also on our executive ranks. Both.
That's great.
And also putting a priority on culture. We need a greater cultural focus.
More
diversity. We included provisions for suppliers to, you know, to encourage them to provide greater diversity.
You're also on a few other boards. It's a French company called RATP Development. What's that all about?
Yeah, RATP Dev, in fact, that's a subsidiary of the Paris-based metro company, RATP. And RETP is a state-owned, just like transport, companies in big municipalities in Canada. But the scale is amazing. So throughout the RETP network, we transport 14 million people a day in 14 countries. Four million are
That's
in Paris.
Yeah.
So there's 4 million people using the commuter network per day in Paris. The transport company of Paris is also led by a woman. And the Minister of Transport in France is also a woman.
Wow.
And our board is, in France, there's a rule for 40% representation for boards. Well, we're exceeding this. So really like to think that...
You're well surrounded.
These were elements that got me to consider joining that board, because it's in Europe, I have to travel, but I thought, wow. So hoping that we can, you know, bring this expertise here, but also great experience for me in a different context, in a country that was very macho for many, many years.
So you're obviously very busy, because you also serve on a few other boards, Yamana Gold, AGF Group. You also have some volunteer involvement. I understand you're an avid golfer, skier. Do you still play tennis? And I'm thinking, how do you manage all that? I mean, your professional life, what you're working on through your consulting business, all these boards, and your personal life. How do you balance it all?
Well, that's a good question.
I think it's the toughest question I've asked you so far.
I would say, well, you know, when you start something, you always think, well, I'll give up something. Mm-hmm. In reality, you don't always give up things. And I think being a consultant, for me, starting my consultancy firm has been a challenge. Because in a big corporate environment, you know, Desjardins, SNC-Lavalin, Capital, you have
lots of infrastructure.
Team. You have a team around you, which I don't. And I'm sure you share this with your new business. On the other hand, it gives me flexibility that I didn't have, you know, because we all have personal, you know, family commitments and all this, but I can take squeeze some that I could not before.
Mm-hmm. And you've always worked hard.
I've always worked hard. I haven't played golf much this summer, I must admit. I tried to skip a few days per, you know, per winter, and I'd love to get back regularly on the tennis court, but this is currently not possible. So in a sense, there's something that suffers. I thought there has to be enough time for family, enough time for relaxing, and seeing friends too. So the sports, as currently, it's my issue.
That's what's
Now, could I wake up at 4 a.m.? Yes, I'm just not good at waking up early, especially if I go to bed at midnight. So you make choices, but I think it's about liking what you do.
Yes.
And I think there's stuff like Yamana Gold, where Peter Miron, the chair and CEO, has brought great leadership in upgrading, updating the governance. You know, we now have 4 women on that board. It's a transformed organization, but really good executives. So that's very
rewarding.
We all each have just a small role in this, but I think we're part of it. So I wouldn't see myself just be on boards. I love the adrenaline of doing deals, of starting things, and I have a lot of energy. Now I'm thinking, what will I do after the chamber? You know, I'll be the past chair after a year. But this has
been, you'll just do more of some, you know, one of the other things here on this list.
I'm sure, but you're kind of, oh my God, there's something in my, you know, in my.
Okay.
But could I be not busy enough for one day?
Give yourself a week, Christiane.
Absolutely.
You mentioned you need to make time to relax. What do you do to relax? What do you go to?
I love gardening.
You do?
I love the colors of flowers. I love gardening, but not for tomato or cucumber and all this. That's boring. I love flowers, trees with flowers, mixing colors. As I'm getting a little older, I spend more time there. Before, I would have been more time on the tennis court, but that's important. I think it's just changing the pace, relaxing, and getting big, bold plans.
What's the hardest thing you've ever had to do?
You see, there was silence. I would say the hardest thing I've had to do professionally has been to, as the recently named head at SNC-Lavalin Capital, what I'd been told that people's management would take only 10% of the time. Because I was a deal maker, I didn't know how to manage people. The first thing I had to do was to have a discussion with a senior analyst who had been at SNC for 15 years and didn't fit with the team. It took me 2 months. Every day, my assistant would.
It took you 2 months to.
He was doing well. He was just doing other things, and he didn't fit. So every day, I thought, I'll talk to, you know. And I liked him as a person. And I know one day after we had a conversation, I knew I would never take 2 months anymore.
Yes.
And he was a good person. He understood. That was the toughest. I hated this. You don't have to do this when you do a deal. But then I realized it was much better. So I got better at this. So
letting people go.
Letting someone go who had been, you know, someone I really appreciate the company and all this. Mm-hmm. But for the good of the group. So being fair with this is the toughest. And personally, I'd say by far losing my mother.
Yes.
You know, you have role models.
Away? When did she pass away?
7 years ago,
which
is a great role model. My mom, you know, went back to work. She had great personality. today, should have been an EVP PR, I'm sure. You could leave her. She spoke some English, not much. You could leave her on a bench in Central Park in New York, and she had made friends. Could leave her in the metro, the subway, and she made friends. She made friends. She had discussions. So she's a great inspiration. And she always said something that I think is useful, especially useful for us women, which was, en français, c'est quand on veut, on peut. If you want, you can.
You can.
And it applied to her as well because, you know, she had a disabling illness at some point. She had a stroke and she recovered way, way beyond what everyone said. And she had trouble speaking and she would say, when we want, we can. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what stayed with me.
Okay. What would you tell your 18-year-old self?
I would tell that I should make connections much faster. There's no...
Christiane, are you telling me that you have to go any faster than you're going now?
Yeah, because earlier, not faster, but earlier, I would make connections with... I thought that, like, in school, you get rewarded on marks. If you do the best deal, you get... But people have to know. Otherwise, sometimes someone else takes your credit. You're also opening potential opportunities for your career. I was lucky I joined SNC. I could have stayed at the EDC, and I would not achieve my full potential. Would not have been, because I'd stay at my desk, I'd do the deals. I wouldn't go out, I wouldn't meet enough people.
So it's more the social
interaction, the groups, being part of groups, which also gives an opportunity to be a leader. If you're in a group, in an association, you can volunteer, you can take mandates, you create new networks. You never have enough networks. So I tried to, you know, fast track this.
Yes, later on. When you were younger.
But I see so many. Although I see so many younger women, they all seem to be focused on the same thing as I was: delivering excellence and letting someone else take the credit.
What do you think that is?
I don't know. It used to be that they said it's the education with the nuns, but gee, there's no more nuns schools.
We can't blame the nuns.
So
on
I
this
can't
one,
blame.
Christiane. I don't know. I think it's. It was yesterday. I actually was reading an article on this, and there were a few theories. One of them was that going out with, say, you're in a male-dominated industry, there's a lot of resistance of going out with the guys. I mean, you know, going for the beer, whatever, and there's, on both sides, the women also have this other career they have, which is going home, you know, making dinner, the children, bedtime, that kind of thing. So they don't have time to go for a beer or go for lunch, but they need to make time. They need to make time somehow, somewhere to connect socially.
Absolutely. And I like the way you say another career. You're right. And they cannot share so much about this other career with guys who don't have the same career, right? You share what you have in common. They have to make time. It can be time at breakfast. It can be time.
Yes.
And it can be time, the work day, as enough hours. The extra means to me social engagement, meaning engaging, sometimes in different sectors. And I have to think, my theory is that this lack of engagement early probably explains why investment banking is still in no women's land at senior level. No matter what we say, investment banking at senior level is in no women's land. Not because women are not competent, not because they don't put the hour, because there's been not enough proximity when people were younger. So whoever gets at the top will try to get people who are familiar with.
Yes, that is something we deal with on an ongoing basis. But you've been very successful at breaking or cracking the glass ceiling. Not only job-wise, boards. And keep on going, Christiane. I'm right behind you.
Merci. Merci beaucoup. Merci, Nicole.
Christiane's success is in large part due to her broad and inclusive approach to business and the causes that she embraces. She thinks big, and she understands the interdependencies, the nuances, and the many moving pieces of large, complex issues. She is a perfect fit for today's multifaceted environment. I hope that you enjoyed this podcast. And if you want to listen to more conversations like this one, look for Leaders Unplugged at iTunes or Google Play. I also want to thank our producer, Josie Guimont, and our editor, Graham Harris. Until next time.